ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदन्तिकम् वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन्वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणारघुनाथं वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्ध जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधकान्ता नमस्तु ते तप्तकाञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतिदानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 27. Chapter is entitled Attack by Chandavega on the City of Puranjana, the Character of Kalakanya. And the verse today is number 26.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Oh,
please. Continued, O gentle one, I am now present before you to serve you. Please accept me and thus show me mercy. It is a gentleman's greatest duty to be compassionate upon a person who is distressed. Please repeat, Galakanya continued. O gentle one, I am now present before you to serve you. Please accept me and thus show me mercy. It is a gentleman's greatest duty to be compassionate upon a person who is distressed. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Yavanaraj, the king of the Yavanas, could also refuse to accept Galakanya, daughter of time, but he considered the request due to the order of Narad Muni. Thus he accepted Galakanya in a different way. In other words, the injunctions of Narad Muni or the path of devotional service can be accepted by anyone within the three worlds, and certainly by the king of the Yavanas. Lord Chaitanya himself requested everyone to preach the cult of Bhakti Yoga all over the world, in every village and town. Preachers in the Krishna consciousness movement have actually experienced that even the Yavanas and Vrishas have taken to spiritual life on the strength of Narad Muni's Pancharatrika Vidhi. When mankind follows the disciplic succession as recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone throughout the world will benefit. Ato prajasva mam bhadra bhajanti me dayam kuru etavan purusho dharmo yadartam anukampati. Kalakandi continued, O gentle one, I am now present before you to serve you. Please accept me and thus show me mercy. It is a gentleman's greatest duty to be compassionate upon a person who is distressed. This is a continuation of Narad Muni's instructions to Maharaj Prachina Parishad. And in this chapter, he is describing how King Puranjana, the allegorical king, who is actually Maharaj Prachina Parishad himself, is being attacked by old age and invalidity, personified by this personality, Galakanya. Galakanya literally means the daughter of time. And her other name is Jara, or old age. Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. So, Galakanya was searching for a husband, and no one was willing to accept her. No one likes to accept old age. And she also approached Narad Muni himself in text 21. She's approaching Narad Muni to marry him. He says, knowing me to mean a vowed brahmachari, she became lusty and proposed that I accept her. So Narad Muni, because of his tapasya, he was very attractive, although he was an Aishtik Brahmachari. And Kali Kanya approached him to satisfy her lusty desires. But naturally, Narad Muni did not accept her, but he suggested that she approach the king of the Yavanas. When Narad Muni refused to accept Kali Kanya, she became angry and cursed him that he won't be able to stay in one place for a long time. But Narad Muni, he took that curse as a blessing that he has to continuously travel and preach. And despite being cursed, he was still compassionate upon Kali Kanya. It's very extraordinary compassion. The lady approached him improperly and cursed him when he declined, and still he suggested a course of action for her. So he directed her to the king of Yavanas, whose other name is Bhaya, or fear. So in today's verse, stating that the king of the Yavanas, he could also have refused to accept Kali Kanya, but because Narad Muni had instructed this combination, therefore he accepted her. And this is one of the principles of a Kshatriya, to give shelter to the distressed. There are different categories of personalities who are to be always protected: the cows, the brahmanas, the elderly, the children, and the women. These always require protection. And especially for a Kshatriya, his main duty to society is to protect. So he is especially obligated to protect anyone who approaches him in distress. So Kali Kanya is presenting herself as a very distressed, unprotected lady, and so she requests Yavanaraj to accept her and give her shelter. So this principle of a Kshatriya accepting, giving shelter to distressed women, are often described in Shastra. There are several examples that come to mind of different kings and heroes who were similarly approached by unprotected women for shelter, and they gave that shelter. That's one of the duties of a Kshatriya. He should not reject a woman who is approaching him in that way. When Arjuna returned to Hastinapur from Dwarka after Lord Krishna had disappeared, and Maharaj Yudhishthira was waiting for Arjuna's return, and Maharaj Yudhishthira noticed many inauspicious signs in the atmosphere. And when Arjuna actually arrived, he saw that Arjuna was very depressed and distressed. And so he was trying to guess why Arjuna is feeling so depressed. And he, in the back of his mind, he knew it must be because Lord Krishna has disappeared from the planet. But he gives a whole list of reasons why Arjuna might be feeling distressed. Maybe he's been defeated by someone who is unworthy, who is not equal to him. Or maybe he's not been able to give protection to someone who asked him. Or maybe he has rejected a woman who approached him for shelter. So like this, there were several causes Maharaj Yudhishthira was suggesting. Maybe this was the reason why Arjuna is so distressed. So one of them was that he did not give shelter to a woman who approached him. So this is one of the dharmas of a Kshatriya. Earlier also in Arjuna's life, when he was traveling for 1 year, Arjuna had to take a vacation from Hastinapur. There was an agreement that because they had a common wife, there were five brothers married to Draupadi, so they had to have some system of intermixing with each other. So it was decided that there would be certain times where one of the brothers would be with Draupadi and the other brothers were not to interrupt at those periods. So one occasion when Draupadi was with Maharaj Yudhishthira, I believe, and they were together in the armory, in the weapon room in the palace. So that time some brahmana came in a distressed condition and he was calling out for help that I think someone was stealing his cows. There was some problem. So Arjuna heard that the brahmana needs protection. So he immediately went to help him. So he had to go to that room to get his weapons. So he entered that room where Yudhishthira and Draupadi were. So he took his weapons, he went and rescued the cows and helped the brahmana, and he came back. And he told Maharaj Yudhishthira, so now I'm going on my my 1 year exile, which was the condition that if anyone interrupted one of the other brothers when it was their time with Draupadi, they would have to do that. And Yudhishthira said, no, it's okay, you don't need to worry about that. It was an emergency. Don't take it seriously. But Arjuna, this is another great quality of these Kshatriyas. They're so bound by their promises and honor that he felt, no, whatever it was, I broke the condition, so I must pay the consequences. So he left for 1 year and traveled as a sadhu, wandering to different holy places. So during his travels, at one point he was bathing in a river, and he was mysteriously sucked down into the water. And he emerged in the kingdom of the Nagas. The Nagas are like the celestial snake devatas, and they can change their form into a human or a snake, and they have a whole realm where they live. So he found himself there, and at that time it was evening time. He was just about to do his evening rituals, yagya and Gayatri. So he saw the yagya fire was ready, already there inside the palace. So he did his rituals, and then he was wondering, who brought me here? What is my, why have I come here? And then one very beautiful Naga princess appeared there, and her name was Ulupi, and she introduced herself that she was in the water, and she saw Arjuna and was very attracted to him, and therefore she, by her mystic powers, she brought him to her kingdom. And so she requested Arjuna, please, you must accept my hand. I've approached you, and it's the duty of a Kshatriya to accept a woman in this condition. And Arjuna, he was doubtful. He said, well, I'm actually on this exile for 1 year. I'm supposed to observe celibacy, and I don't think I can fulfill your request because of my particular circumstances. And then she convinced him, said, that vow was only in relation to Draupadi. If you accept another wife, that's a totally different circumstance. So in this way, on the basis of dharma, not on the basis of sense gratification, Arjuna accepted her proposal. And this shloka also says, it's the Purusha Dharma, the religious principle for any gentleman, particularly we're talking about Kshatriyas here, to accept it, accept the hand of the distressed woman. So Arjuna, he was convinced by her dharmic argument, not by her beauty. He wasn't attracted in that way. He was actually trying to get out of it. But when she convinced her on the basis of dharma, then he accepted and married her and spent a little time with her. Similarly, Bhima also, when the Pandavas were the first time in the forest after the house of Lakh was burnt and they escaped underground in the tunnel, they were traveling in the jungle for some time. So I think it was the first night they were camping in the jungle, Kunti and the five Pandavas. So they were sleeping just under the trees on the ground in a very pitiable condition, and Bhima was staying awake to guard them. So in that forest, it was inhabited by a very fierce Rakshasa named Hidimba and his sister Hidimbi. So Hidimba woke up in the evening and he could smell there's some humans nearby. So he told his sister, go kill these humans and bring them to us. We'll enjoy their flesh today. So Hidimbi, she followed the order of her brother. She went there following the scent and spied the five Pandavas and Kunti sleeping. When she saw Bhima, she was very attracted to him. Bhima was a very powerful personality. So she was attracted to him and she decided, I don't want to kill and eat this person. Better I marry him than I can enjoy with him for my whole life. So she turned herself into a very beautiful maiden and approached Bhima and proposed to him. And so he was immediately suspicious, said, what is this beautiful woman doing in the dark jungle in the middle of the night? Who are you? And what is your real purpose? What's your identity? And then she admitted, yes, actually I'm your Rakshasi, Hidimbi. And my brother sent me here to kill all of you. But seeing you, I've been attracted, so you have to accept my hand. And I'll take you away from here so Hidimba doesn't come to know what happened and doesn't come here and attack you. And Bhima, of course, he was not one to shirk away from a fight. He was very happy. He said, oh no, let your brother come. I'll destroy him. You'll see my power today. I'm not going to run away from here. So as they were having this conversation, Hidimba was getting impatient. Why she hasn't come back? What's going on? So he came himself to see. And he saw, oh, look at her. She's so ungrateful. She's my sister and she's proposing to this human who I want to eat. So he became very angry and attacked the Pandavas, attacked Bhima. And so Bhima, not wanting to disturb his sleeping brothers and mother, he dragged Hidimba to some distance away and they started to fight very fiercely. And of course in a little while the noise of the battle woke the Pandavas and so they all came to see what was happening. And Arjuna saw Bhima wrestling with the Rakshasa and he was joking with Bhima, oh, it looks like you're very tired, you're not able to kill him, why don't you step aside, I'll finish him off for you. So when Bhima heard that kind of insulting joke, he became more angry. He said, don't worry, I'm just playing with him, I'll finish him off very soon. And naturally he did. He pulverized Hidimba, killed him. And so there was the dead Hidimba, and Hidimbi was still waiting for Bhima to accept her. And she appealed also to Kunti Devi that your son, he's just killed my shelter, my brother. For my sake, I wanted to marry him. So please, you have to request him to accept me. And she also explained how this is dharmic. So the Pandavas and Kunti agreed to the proposal. And so Hidimbi and Bhima were married. And from their union, their son was born, Ghatotkach, who later on helped the Pandavas during the Battle of Kurukshetra. A few days ago, we had in the purport the story of Maharaj Yayati. And I think it was Yashoda Dulalpur was speaking on that. So there also, in the story of Maharaj Yayati, he was approached by Sharmishta to accept her hand also. Sharmishta was the son of the king of the Asuras, Vrishabharva. But because of the dispute with Devayani, Shukracharya's daughter, she was given to Devayani as a maid servant. So when Devayani married King Yayati, she also went along with Devayani as a maid servant. But she wasn't very happy being a princess to serve her ex-friend, Devayani. So she also approached Maharaj Yayati that you should also, give me a child. You should also give me shelter. So Maharaj Yayati, he was wondering what to do. And he knew that this is the dharma of the Kshatriyas. However, Shukracharya had forbidden him. Shukracharya, who was Devayani's father, he had some suspicion that this might happen, that Sharmishta might want to have relation with the king also. So he said, you're not allowed to, I forbid you to consider this proposal. But Maharaj Yayati, again, on the basis of dharma, he couldn't refuse Devayani, Sharmishta's request. So he accepted her and he also gave her children. And in fact, she had three sons, whereas Devayani, who was the official, official wife or the main wife, she only had two sons. So that was another reason why Devayani, when she found out about the relation between her husband and Sharmishta, she was very upset. But again, the principle of dharma, the Kshatriyas are to uphold that. So on that basis, even though Shukracharya had told him not to, he accepted Sharmishta's hand. And thereafter he was cursed by Shukracharya to become old, to accept this jara. So the Kshatriya must uphold dharma at whatever cost, even if it is personally very troublesome for him. So these great kings have shown us this example. So here, the king of the Yavanas, he is also going to accept Kalakanya, as Prabhupada says in the Prabhupada, in a different way, and we'll find out exactly what that is in future verses. So this Yavanas, Prabhupada talks a couple of days back in the purport, he's defining what a Yavana is. And he defines that as one who does not follow the Vedic principles. One who does not follow all these rules and regulations of Vedic civilization is called a Yavana or Mlecha. One should not mistakenly think that this refers to certain classes of men in other countries. There is no question of limitation according to nationalism. Whether one lives in India or outside India, he is called a Yavana or Mlecha if he does not follow the Vedic principles. So, although Prabhupada says here on this occasion that it doesn't refer to any particular race, in other places, Yavanas do refer to a particular race of people. There's a shloka in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam which mentions yavanas, and Prabhupada in the purport he gives a description of who those people are, where they're from.
Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasha abira shumpa yavana kashadaya yanyecha papa yadapashraya shraya shudhyanti tasmai prabhavishnave nama.
So this is a list of various low caste or lowly categorized peoples. And the shloka is actually saying that by contact with the pure devotee of the Lord, even these kinds of people can be purified. So the first is Kirata. And Prabhupada in the purport, he gives a description of each of these peoples, who they are. So the Kiratas are like a tribal hunters in the jungle. Hunas. Even in English, the term Hun is there. And even today we have the country Hungary. So the Hunas are the Hungarian, Ukrainian, Russian, Germanic people. The Huns were a very ferocious tribe of people in Europe. They were conquering large parts of the continent and killing many. Attila the Hun is a very famous barbarian king. So the Hunas were also known in Vedic times. So the Kiratas, the Hunas, Andhra. And Andhra is still Andhra Pradesh, and India is a large state. There are many tribal, semi-civilized people living there. So even in Vedic times, that area was known as Andhra. Kirata, Huna, Andhra. Pulinda, Prabhupada says, Pulindas are the Greeks. Pulkasha, he doesn't describe further what the Pulkasha tribe is. Kirata, Huna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, Abhira, Shumbha, Yavana, Kashadaya. Yavanas are the Turks and some other tribes, people from Sindh, Abhiras, and the Kashas. That's a very interesting one. The Mongolian Chinese people are called Kashas. In ISKCON, the devotees, the Chinese yatra is called Kasha, Kasha Desh. That's the Vedic term for Chinese people. So, the shloka is saying that any of these lowborn personalities from any of these tribes or cultures, they can be purified by coming into contact with a pure devotee of the Lord. And we can see practically how that's happened now in these various places, Hungary, China, even Turkey, there are devotees and they are preaching Krishna consciousness there. So this relates with the next part of the purport where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is quoted as saying that the cult of Krishna Bhakti, Bhakti Yoga, should be spread in every town and village. Prithivite achijato nagaradikram sarvatra prajar hoi bemorna. So even the Kashas and the Hunas and the Yavanas, even these people are taking to Krishna consciousness by the mercy of pure devotees of the Lord who are traveling and preaching all over the world, led by Srila Prabhupada himself. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Yavana is pretty much synonymous with Muslim. There are many, many times the word is used in the Bengali to refer to the Muslim king, Yavana Raj. Like here we have the king of the Yavanas, who is, in this instance, his bhaya or fear. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, the Yavana Raj was the king of the Muslims, who they sometimes would try to give trouble to the devotees. And another reference to Yavana is in Krishna's pastimes. We had this Kala Yavana, the king who came to attack Mathura with 30 million or some amazing number of soldiers. He came to attack Mathura at the same time that Jarasandha was attacking. So he's also the king of the Yavanas. So in some cases, the Yavana does seem to refer to a particular race of people. But ultimately, it refers to anyone who is not following the Vedic principles. And Prabhupada says here that even the Yavanas and Mlechas, who are considered a very low condition, even below, much below Shudras, but they can take to spiritual life on the strength of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada is saying that we're actually experiencing this in the preaching of the Krishna consciousness movement. Another reference to Yavana in relation to the holy name, since we are supposed to be also talking something about the holy name week. There's another reference to a yavana who is being pierced by a boar. This is actually a Shastric example. I think it's from the Shringa Purana, where it's describing that when the yavana is being killed, being gored by a boar, and he cries out in condemning the boar, haram, haram, haram. So this word is still actually used in Islamic culture. In Arabic, it means something which is condemned or untouchable. Like for the Muslims, the flesh of pigs is haram. It's untouchable. It's condemned. So as that yavana is being pierced and is being killed by the boar, he's cursing the boar, saying haram, haram, haram. So this example is given of a, although in his language it means something very abominable, it's also indirectly the name of the Lord, Haram. The devotees also chant, Hey Ram, Haram, my Lord Ram, please save us. So this is an example of Namabhas, indirect purification, indirect chanting of the Lord bringing about purification. So even such a abominable condition, a Muslim person being dying and uttering basically curse words in his language, but he's getting benefit of chanting the Lord's name, Lord Ram's name. So this is also further explained in the pastime of Ajamil, how even if one chants indirectly or jokingly or for entertainment or neglectfully, still one gets great benefit chanting the holy name of the Lord. Sanketyamba Parihasyamba Sobam Helanamebaba Vaikuntanama Grahanat Asheshakaharam Vidu Asheshaka. Like we have Agasura, basically the sinful demon Agha is sin. Asheshaka Haram. So unlimited sins are destroyed even by such chanting. Indirect chanting, jokingly chanting, chanting for entertainment, or chanting without concentration. Sanketyam, Parihasyam, Stovam, Helanam. Any of these ways of chanting are capable of destroying unlimited quantities of sins. So this is described in the story of Ajamil, when Yamaraj was talking to his messengers. So in this way, the avanas, the mlechas, everyone can be purified by coming in contact with Krishna consciousness and coming in contact with the holy name of the Lord. Another example of this indirect chanting, which directly relates to Narad Muni, who is actually speaking this chapter, is Maharishi Valmiki. So Valmiki is the author of Ramayana. So in his previous existence, he was actually a dacoit, like a highway robber. So he used to ambush travelers in the forest and loot them and kill them sometimes to maintain himself. So on one occasion, Narad Muni was passing through that jungle, and the dacoit Valmiki accosted Narad Muni, you know, and wanted all his possessions. Of course, Narad Muni, what does he have? A quarter pot and a veena, doesn't have anything of major interest. But Narad Muni said, yes, yes, I'll give you what I have, but first you have to do one thing for me. You go to your family and ask them that you're doing all these sinful activities for their sake. Go ask them if they're going to share the sinful reaction also. Because you're performing sinful activities to maintain them, and they're enjoying the fruits of your sins. So you check with them, are they going to enjoy also the fruits of the sinful reaction from these activities, not just the money that you bring in. So he was confident, yeah, of course, my family loves me, they'll take part of my sinful reaction for sure. So then he went back and asked his family, and they said, no, we're not interested in your sins. You do the sin, we'll just enjoy the results. So he was quite disappointed by their response and disillusioned. So he came back to Narayana and he said, no, they refuse to share my sinful reactions from all the sinful activities I've been doing. And in association with Narad Muni, he was getting purified. So Narad Muni said, okay, so you should give up this sinful profession of yours, and otherwise you're going to get all this reaction. So better you give it up and take to devotional service. Now, of course, Valmiki, being a very sinful person, he wasn't qualified to directly come to a very elevated platform. So Narad Muni told him, you should chant Mara, Mara, Mara. Mara means kill, basically. And that was his business. So he could relate to that. So you know, he initiated, in one sense, Valmiki, and told him to chant Mara, Mara, Mara. So Valmiki was following that. And of course, if you chant Mara, 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 it eventually becomes Rama, 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 Rama. Same syllables, just opposite. And by chanting that, Valmiki was elevated to the position of being one of the great, you know, Vedic sages, who, after meditating for 60,000 years, he was inspired to write the Ramayana and describe all the pastimes of Lord Ram. So, there's another example of Narad Muni's very expert preaching ability, how he's able to convert even the most degraded personalities and make them into Vaishnavas. I actually had a lot of other material prepared about Narad Muni, but seeing the time is already slipping away, perhaps we'll leave that for another day. And we can ask if anyone has any questions or comments for now.
Okay. You mentioned the members of the society that are to be protected. And of course, one of them is women. I had heard once, and I'd like to know if you know of any Shastric reference, and to what degree, a woman is not to be blamed. I can understand how a child, a dependent child, can't, the parents would take responsibility for their mistakes or what, up to a certain age. But what about the women, and to what degree is that true, if so? Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, I have heard that, and I'm not sure if I can give a definitive answer, but there are definitely examples in Shastra where a woman may have made some mistake and they're not to be punished very severely for that, because if they're under proper protection of their father or their husband especially, then he's actually responsible for his dependents. So the husband is responsible for, you know, the family. So if the wife, the woman does something improper, the proper rectification would be for the husband to deal with it and to, you know, take responsibility, and ultimately it will be his fault if, you know, if his wife did something improper.
I remember reading about, I'm not exactly sure where it is, but I can remember reading that Prabhupada says, like, Brahmins, children, old men and women, they're above the law in the sense that they're not to be punished if they do something wrong.
Yeah.
So the same categories of people who are worthy of protection, they're also not to be punished,
right,
even if they do something wrong.
Yeah. That's the principle, because they're not supposed to be independent. They're supposed to be protected at all times, so therefore the responsible person is, you know, the person who's looking after them is responsible for them. Just like if the servant does something wrong, it's the master who has to rectify the situation. It's not, you know, you can't blame the servant. It's actually the master who has to take responsibility for the mistake. So that's the responsibility of the, you know, the king or the husband or the master. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shri Prabhupada ki.